This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
Duke outlasts Butler 61-59. So much drama, so much emotion in this one, and we kick things off tonight with a bang. Joining us now via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Duke star John Shire. John, national champion, congratulations. How do you feel?
Well, it feels great. Thanks so much.
Okay, tell me what's going through your mind that final play when you're watching Hayward's shot leave his hand at midcourt going towards the rim.
Oh, well, it seemed like it was in the air forever. It was a great feeling. And when I finally saw that thing go in.
When you guys were diagramming that final play and Zubek misses the free throw, was that something, did you think they were going to get that greatest shot at the end?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, it wasn't the best look, even though it came pretty close. He was close to half court, and it was, I thought it was a pretty tough shot, even though it looked pretty good when it left his hand.
Hey, what was it like playing as the real, true visiting team, 69,000 people rooting against you on Monday night?
Yeah, well, it definitely wasn't a home game for us, but, you know, we're used to games like that where people rooting against us, and we're not all Duke fans, so we were ready to go, and it didn't have a huge effect on us.
How did Coach K prepare you for what you were going to face on Monday night?
You know, I think the same way we prepared the whole year. We just talked about approaching the same way, and we had to be tough. And, you know, we knew what we were going up against with that Butler team. They're a great team. Everybody, I think, could tell that Monday night if they didn't see it before. But it was, you know, we knew it was going to be a great battle.
A lot of attention with you and Kyle Singler, Nolan Smith. You guys all had three more great games in the national title game. What did you guys talk about after the game was over?
Well, we haven't had a chance to talk yet. We've been so hectic, and we've just been celebrating. But once we get back to Duke next couple of days, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about some more.
Has it sunk in for you yet, you're a national champion?
No, it definitely hasn't. It hasn't hit us yet.
John Shire, Duke star with a huge night. Duke beats Butler 61-59 to take home the national championship. Congratulations, John. Best of luck the rest of the way and enjoy the celebration back in Duke.
All right. Thank you so much.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Doug Gottlieb joining us. Mike Krzyzewski is going to be offered somewhere between $12.5 and $15 million. I'm sure he makes in the 3 to 4 to 5. I don't know what he makes, but he makes a lot of money. So, and you would know that, Duggar. How do you not take that phone call from the Nets when you can literally have the best player in the world for 10 years, potentially, in LeBron, make the uniforms, name the team, have real personnel, because he's not taking that job because he's got a lot of leverage. How do you not take that phone call?
Well, first, you're making several major assumptions.
Yes.
By the way, you do know where the Nets are going to play at least the next 2, maybe even 3 years.
Yeah, they say
they're playing Newark.
Yeah, okay? Lovely part of the country.
So, and look, Newark has a beautiful arena, but it's still Newark. So, yeah. while you're being sold on New York and Brooklyn and the new Russian owner taking you to this fantastic arena with LeBron James. You're in Newark, and you're going to Brooklyn. You're not going to Manhattan just yet.
Well, Brooklyn's nice.
Brooklyn is nice. Brooklyn's at least 3 years away. I mean, they've just broken ground on this thing.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing.
Yeah, but your wife dated you for several years, knowing the big payoff at the end.
See, to you, everything is about that payoff. And I think to a lot of people, they see it as there's a reason they're going to pay you four times as much. There's four times as many headaches, four times as many problems, four times as many games, four times as many practices, four times as many issues. There's a reason it costs more to get him to go there. And you don't take a job when you have a really good one just because of the paycheck, especially when you're already rich.
In the history of pro sports, name one person, and you may be right, that has ever turned down a quadruple of income.
Well, he turned down nearly a quadruple of income.
No, the Lake. No, Jerry Buss has never. It was.
What was it?
Well, he makes $4 million a year.
It was $40 million over. It was $40 million over 5 years. It was over doubling his. The point is, he's turned down double his income before.
But he said,
and the chance to coach Kobe Bryant.
He also said,
that was a power play, by the way, going back a couple of years ago.
Well, he said
there was a new president at the school.
Yes.
He wanted certain things set into place for how he could create his operation.
Sure.
He got everything he wanted, and now he's. Why would you leave when you can still coach pros? You just do it in the summer when they come when they want to, and you can cut them if you want to, instead of inheriting bad contracts and bad guys and all the issues of the NBA. I mean, have you ever seen a coach go, man, I can't wait to get, because that's a coach's game. College basketball, coach's game, NBA, player's game. Which one do you think he wants to be around?
Well, I would prefer NBA because I deal with I'd rather eat Morton's than Applebee's. And I like Applebee's.
You can eat Morton's. You can eat Morton's in North Carolina. They have a Morton's there.
But I.
Okay. And by the way, again, you're in Newark. You're not in New York. Don't confuse the two.
Well,
it's not the Knicks. And LeBron is not signed, sealed, and delivered. You don't have the number one overall pick.
His legacy today, even after last night, is one of the best college coaches. If you go to the NBA with LeBron, again, just hypothetically, and win a championship, then you've got Olympic gold, college dominance, NBA championships. I think you can make the statement and not have a lot of pushback. He's the greatest single basketball coach in the history of the planet.
Yeah. That's
a big old... He's got an ego, does he not?
Everyone has an ego.
Sure.
And you can't be great in this world without having an ego.
I agree.
But he's already said he doesn't want to do it.
Well, so Roy Williams said he was staying at Kansas.
No, he never said he was staying at Kansas for North Carolina. Yes, they do.
A lot of stuff.
They do, and it is a lot of money. But by my estimation is there's a reason they're going to pay you so much more. Why would somebody pay him that much money? Unless it's such a bad job, such an awful job that you have to overpay for it.
You know why?
Because if it's a really good job, you don't have to overpay that much. You go, look at your job, look at our job, which one's better?
Well, the Lakers offered him huge money. That's not a bad job.
Right. But it was within the they offered him an NBA caliber contract for a coach with his resume, a coach that Kobe Bryant had handpicked when they needed a coach.
Well, they know they have to pay him.
Four times as much money. There's a reason.
Well, no, I disagree. I mean, why does Derek Jeter make four times as much money as the Royals shortstop? Because he's just better.
Well, he's also in New York, and he's also part of a championship organization.
Well, this is the NBA, which has more money than college.
No, you're changing the argument. The argument is, why would, if you're going to change
you're
jobs.
You're making the argument.
Yes.
That the only reason you make a lot more money is because the job is, sometimes you're just more talented and you have leverage and make more.
No, that's not the point. I'm not saying he's not worth it. Okay, I'm saying that if you have a job, one coaching job in a different level in the NBA, okay, and you're sitting to yourself and you're saying, okay, he guy makes $3.5-4 million a year, whatever he makes.
Right.
And they're going to offer him, there's reportedly 12 to 15. By the way, that's just one report, and it's from the Bergen County Record.
Very accurate.
Could be accurate, could be inaccurate, we don't know.
Nobody lies there ever.
No one ever lies to a newspaper just to get their name as a source to be a guy. The point is there's a reason that the Nets have to so overpay to get a coach that they've been already turned down by some of the other elite coaches. I'll also tell you this. You talk about an ego. You think he wants to not be the first guy who got the call? And by all estimation, he wasn't the first guy who got the call. So I think there's a lot to it. Can we talk about the game last night since you don't think it was a good game? Since it was as good a basketball, just a basketball game. Okay, I know that you can only watch a basketball game when there's future NBA stars on it,
yes.
But the rest of us were kind of taken by the fact that 40 minutes, two teams, the refs let them play. The kids, with a couple rare exceptions, play within the bounds of good taste. I mean, Zubek and Matt Howard are throwing each other around.
Yeah.
That was, in terms of intensity, that was about as intense a basketball game as I've seen. That's why it's a great basketball game played in a championship game. Doesn't have future NBA superstars.
Yeah.
Those guys, well, frankly, lost in the Elite Eight to West Virginia.
Yeah, well, West Virginia and Butler can't shoot, and they both made the Final Four, which speaks of the lack of finishers in college basketball, which we know because they've moved to the NBA. And I thought it was dramatic and tight. I don't want to confuse that with what one columnist said, the greatest game ever. I thought it was very dramatic. But I would argue that there have been more dramatic games. I thought Villanova-Georgetown, because there were more big emotional connections with two teams I knew. Big East was gigantic.
How many great NBA players are on the Villanova team, by the way?
Well, Georgetown had a couple.
No. How many great NBA players were on Villanova's team?
They had NBA. I knew them. I had an emotional connection.
No, but how many NBA played? Your argument was?
Three. Ed Pinckney played. Ewing played.
No, Ewing wasn't on Villanova. Who? How many were on Villanova? Ed Pinckney.
Ed Pinckney. I knew the coach.
Okay. Well, okay.
I don't know Butler.
Well, you don't? Everybody else knows Brad Stevens. He's the guy who looks like he got his lunch money stolen yesterday.
I pretty well here. I don't know him.
Really?
No, my job is not to know Butler.
I think it's a top ten team in the preseason.
So.
The guy's 33 years old.
Okay.
He looks like he started shaving last week.
Yeah.
I would say most of America has come to know Brad Stevens last night.
I do not believe that's true.
Okay.
I believe we were rooting for Duke or rooting against Duke, and that's what drove the rating. I think when in the national, like for instance, a great example is the Lakers played Orlando in the NBA Finals. The Lakers completely drive that number.
Oh, I don't disagree that people watched because it was Duke, but also because they were taking on Butler. If it was Duke and Michigan State, it's not nearly as compelling, even though Izzo had been there and Izzo's six Final Fours in 12 years.
Yeah.
The fact is you have a true mid-major competing against the true uber elite of college athletics in basketball.
Yeah.
And that's what creates a compelling, you have arguably the greatest coach of the generation against a 33-year-old who 10 years ago was working at Eli Lilly and decides, I'm going to become an unpaid assistant to then become the head coach at Butler at 33 years old.
If Duke is not in that game and it's Butler, Baylor.
Okay, but you're changing the story. Was the story.
Rockies, Rays, no emotional connection, nobody watched.
Correct.
Yankees, Phillies.
But there was a really good emotional connection, and they had the ball at the end of a game. They play in the same gym, at their home gym, where Hoosiers was filmed.
Yes.
Heck, the guy who hit the real shot, Bobby Plum, whatever, he actually played at Butler. Weren't you sitting there going, call timeout, run the picket fence, wear a shooter, all liquored up, drawing up the play?
By the way,
by the way, how about this? How about Butler's kids went to class yesterday? How great was that story? Great and horrible all at the same time. Think about it. You're in class and you're Butler. You're like, hey, going to the game tonight? You know, the national championship? Got tickets?
I know. I think it's...
pretty strong move.
I watched for Duke last night. I didn't watch for Butler.
Dick Vitale and Dickie V, you are, if nothing else, the champion of the underdog, the champion of the little guy. For those not old enough to remember, you really made your name coaching at the University of Detroit. So I know there was a part of you that you had your heart in your throat as that ball was in the air and Butler had a chance to win it on that desperation three.
Absolutely. You talk about tension. You talk about emotion. You talk about passion. I mean, all of those factors were alive and really alive. I'll tell you, it was an incredible moment. It shows you why March Madness is so unique and so special. And when Hayward let that fly, I thought that baby was going down. Your heart had to be with those kids, but my head had told me from the initial start that Duke would be the better basketball team. However, on this given night, I mean, they won so many fans across America by just getting to the Final Four. But after that performance right now, I think people are sitting there saying, wow, this club was absolutely legitimate. They did such a phenomenal job defensively. They controlled tempo of the game. They don't allow you to get in transition. They did not allow a transition basket to Duke or to Michigan State. It shows you they make you play 5-on-5, and they execute so well. And just a great tribute, certainly to the young coach, Brad Stevens, and all their people. But saying all that, guys, what about the legacy of Mike Krzyzewski? To me, Mike Krzyzewski has always been one of the great coaches of college basketball, whether he won the fourth national title in his career or not. But to me, by winning that game and winning the gold medal as he did in 2008 and leading the USA, to me, Mike Krzyzewski now doesn't only go down as one of the great coaches ever to grace the sideline in college basketball, but to me, he's one of the great leaders and coaches of any sport. He just has that magical way to get people to respond at the real magical moment. And I can't say enough about what he has done in his tenure at Duke University. Think about this. His first 3 years, he's 38-47. And if the climate that exists today, where everything is about the most important moment now, who knows even if he survives. But he does survive, and he goes on now and has 838 wins, 35 away from his mentor, who found him as a youngster in Chicago, took him to West Point, and I know no one is more proud of what he's achieved than Robert Montgomery Knight.
Yeah, certainly if he spurns the NBA, which everybody thinks he will, he's going to continue to move up the ranks of college as far as wins and other accolades as well. So, and you said it, Dickie V, the coaching, but obviously you have some excellent players, but so many people have said that this isn't obviously the best Duke team of all time, and even Coach K has said this is a really good team that plays great. And boy, when they need to, that's exactly what they do. So while they could never pull away from Butler, and there were so many lead changes in this one, on the court, what was the difference for Duke in this one?
I think Kyle Singler. I think Singler's the defensive ability to really neutralize the great play of Hayward was big. I mean, Hayward shoots 2 for 11. Why? Because of the defensive effort of Singler. He did a brilliant job, and not only that, then he also combines that with 19 points as well. And the big three, how special when you think about Shire and Nolan Smith. And guys, what about the story about Nolan Smith? He has, his mom gives him his dad's ring. As we all know, his dad, Derek, played in 1980 for the Doctors of Dunk, Louisville, won a national title, and then lost his life so young to a heart attack. And his mom, before the tournament, gave him the ring, his dad's ring. He took the ring with him throughout the tournament, placed it in his room, and he looked at the ring before he would go to the arena, and he vowed, I want to get one. And now he's one of three combinations, fathers and sons, to have a ring. You think about Scott May, Sean May, Mike Bibby, Henry Bibby, and now it's Derek and Nolan Smith. How beautiful of a moment. I can't say enough about those kids. And you know what's really troubled me, and I commentated on it last night, is the fact, I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people came up to me on the streets and, we hate Duke. We can't stand Duke. And I think about that word hate, and I've never had hate in my body for anyone. I love people, and you could cheer, you could root for who you want to root for, that's fine. But how could you not like what they've done down at Duke? They do it with integrity. They do it as a team. They share the basketball. They play together as a unit. They win. They go to class. They graduate. They're great students, athletes. They represent everything that you'd want as a coach, as a team. And yet, whenever you get to the top of the mountain, people want to beat you up and they want to knock you down. Resentment. Envy. And it's really sad in a way because I say a tribute to the kids at Duke. And they've earned this championship big time because the team they beat was absolutely sensational. I can't say enough about the kids from Butler who now are going to inspire every mid-major school in America to chase the golden dream.
Mike and Dickie V on the morning after a thrilling championship game. So Duke wins number four, and I agree with a lot of what you just said. And listen, let the haters hate Dickie V. At the end of the day, you have to respect the accomplishments of Mike Krzyzewski and what he's done at Duke in his 30 years. And take us back a little bit. He's got four championships that's tied with Adolph Rupp. No one's ever going to catch John Wooden with his 10. But try and sort of juxtapose for those who are not old enough to remember that era in which Wooden was winning versus now. It seems there's so many more players now, so many more good programs, so much more competition. How do you, if you're going to start talking about Krzyzewski and trying to make a case for him as the greatest coach of all time, you're going to have to find some way to reconcile the difference between four titles and 10. Just how much harder is it, do you think, to win a championship today than it was when John Wooden was winning his?
You know, Mike, I would never minimize what certainly Coach Wooden did. It was really special. But as you said, today's day and age is so different. Also with the shot clock, the three-point shot. I mean, all of those things really bring about a little bit of a scenario, especially with the three-point shot revolutionizing the game. Makes it so difficult for you to be able to stand on top. But I will tell you this, my friends, all the Duke haters, get ready, because I'm going to give my guys Mike and Mike right now. Number six next year, we're going down. Yes, the Butler. They're going to be sensational again. Number five, we are going to go right now to Purdue, baby, with Robbie Hummel coming back. And number four, we are going to go, yes, to Villanova. Jay Wright's got a terrific team coming back and some great recruits. Number three, time is up. Michigan State will be outstanding again when they get back to healthy Kalen Lucas. And number two, the Buckeyes. I'm not talking football and Jim Tressel. I'm talking hoops, baby. Remember the name. He'll be the talk of America next year, Jared Sullinger. And number one, let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Why Duke? Nolan Smith, Kyle Singler. I think they come back to school. And then you factor in some outstanding new kids. Remember this name, Kyrie Irving. And then Seth Curry will be there as well, a transfer of Stephon Curry's brother. And I think Duke is going to be flat out loaded and they will be awesome, baby. Again, just like Mike and Mike, they're awesome, baby. It's early in the morning. I get up at 2 a.m., but I did this for my guys because I love you guys, and I love college hoops, and college basketball is the best. Don't give me any argument, anyone else. There is nothing like the drama that unfolded last night here in March Madness. They can write all the scripts they want, man. That was real life. Can you imagine if that shot went in?
It was an unbelievable night. Dick Vitale, thank you so much on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline for getting up early for us.
ESPN college basketball analyst Jimmy Dykes. Jimmy, number one, we'll get to the final seconds of the game and strategies in a second, but what do you think was the deciding factor overall that tilted this game in Duke's favor?
Well, I think a lot is going to be said and already has been said about the toughness, the determination, the defense, the moxie, the togetherness that Butler played with in this tournament. You know what? Duke had all those things tonight, too. And because they beat a team that exemplifies all those traits that I just described, and Duke was every bit of that tonight. On both ends of the floor, valuing the ball, gang rebounding, making tough plays, getting stops when they had to, doing an outstanding team defensive job on Gordon Hayward. I loved watching that game tonight. I know it was 61-59. I love the fact that neither team could get more than a 5 or 6 point lead ever in this ball game. Neither team would go away. There were huge plays made under pressure. I do think Duke was very fortunate because I don't think you intentionally missed the free throw like that at the end. The reason why I say that is when you miss the free throw like that as opposed to going up by 3 points, you now put losing into the equation. And that's almost what happened. And I know Coach K made the call and it worked out in their favor. But had that shot gone, you talk about a decision that would have been questioned. The worst you can do is go to overtime if you make that free throw, but you miss it intentionally. Now you have added losing to the equation. And I thought Duke was fortunate not to have that come back and bite him in the rear.
Jimmy, you're preaching to the choir on that. When I saw that, I heard John Thompson on the broadcast say, oh, they might be better off with missing here. They didn't have any timeouts left. Butler exactly. would have had to, even if Duke makes it, it's still a chaotic inbounds play. They couldn't call a timeout, set things up. I don't think Coach K would have called a timeout. So it still would have been a chaotic way to try to get down the court. But that's exactly right. They put losing as a possibility when, at the worst case scenario, they come down, make some incredible shot, and you wind up going overtime.
And that's almost what happened. You know, and I know you coach your team on a gut feeling at that point and, you know, what your kids are expected, you know, from in practice. But I think you gave Butler a chance to win that game right there when you don't give him a chance. And it almost, we all saw how close it was. That dude almost went in.
ESPN college basketball analyst Jimmy Dykes is breaking down the national title game with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests like Jimmy appear with us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Jimmy, shortly after the game was over, obviously we're going to talk about this tournament belonging to Butler, their story, as you mentioned. Is there a moral victory in losing the national championship game?
No, not if you're in that Butler locker room, not if you're those coaches. Not if you've invested everything you've invested since a year ago when the season ended. They knew they were going to be a good team. They were a preseason top 10 team. You know, maybe some of us questioned how far they'd go in this tournament. I don't think anyone directly associated with that Butler team ever thought that they couldn't win this thing. You know, they had a game plan tonight to do it, and they very well could have. I look back in the second half, you know, there's always going to be some keys in a game that goes down the wire like this. And Duke scored, I know, 3 times for sure, and maybe a fourth time off of a baseline out-of-bounds play. The fourth one was kind of a delayed play. They got it in bounds, and about 20 seconds later resulted in a basket. So I'm going to say Duke got 8 points off of the baseline out-of-bounds plays in the second half, and those were big, big plays. A couple of them was basically because Butler had a small team on the floor. You saw him throw the lob one time to Singler right in front of the rim, and he scored. And another, you know, they get a shot up, and Shire comes in and tips it in. But boy, those were big plays. You eliminate just one of those four baseline out of bounds plays. If you're Butler, you're in a whole lot better shape than you were. But it was, you know, I think both teams played really, really hard. They played really well. Duke defensively to guard Hayward and Shelvin Mack as well as they did. I don't know if Duke will get enough credit. I still think people will talk so much about Butler's defense, and they won't give Duke the credit they deserve in this game.
Now, defensively, Duke had the defensive stand, forcing Gordon Hayward into that twisting, off-balance, one-legged fadeaway with 13 seconds left to go their final possession. Did you like or not like that shot for Butler?
I liked it. I think they did the right thing of getting Gordon Hayward out on the floor and throwing it to him, because initially when Zubek was over on the corner and Butler had to take the timeout, Hayward was the inbounds guy. And I didn't like that because I thought – with 13 seconds to go, if they get it in, it might be difficult to get it back to Hayward with enough time for him to make a really good play. So I like them making the switch and throwing it right inbounds to Hayward and then just kind of giving him a driving alley and letting him go make a play. I thought it was a good shot. I thought he got his shoulder squared. The only difference was Zubek, as a 7-1 defender, did an outstanding job of challenging that shot and making Hayward, you know, lean back just a little bit. But I think if you're Butler and you're Brad Stevens, you think, I'm going to live with this shot. If that shot goes, we're the national champions. If it doesn't, we're probably not going to win the game. And Hayward got, for them, a pretty good look, I think.
Jimmy, as far as Coach Krzyzewski goes, Coach K's got a championship in the 90s. He's got one in the aughts. He's got one in the 80s. He's got 3 decades with championships. What does this do for his legacy?
Oh, my. I mean, certainly it adds to it, and it just continues to build a case for, you know, one of the top 2 or 3 coaches all time in the college game, right there with John Wooden. And when John Wooden was winning his, what, he won 10, 11 titles, whatever it is, it wasn't as difficult of a road as it is to win them now. There weren't near as many teams. There wasn't the elite talent that there is right now that you have to work through from the second round game on. So, it shows his longevity, his determination, his toughness as a coach. Over 3 decades to hang in there and fight it in recruiting and fight it from the motivational standpoint and all the things that go into being the headmaster at Duke. You know, it just continues to reinforce to me how special this guy is. He did not outcoach Brad Stevens tonight at all. Brad Stevens looked every bit the part of Coach Krzyzewski on the other end as far as staying calm and never being rattled, and his team fed off that. And, you know, you might be looking at the next Coach K and this guy from Butler.
He's ESPN college basketball analyst Jimmy Dykes. Jimmy, great stuff, my friend. Appreciate your time with us here on All Might. Have a great one.
Congratulations to the Dukies.
Matt Mosley, the NFC East blogger on ESPN.com, Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What's up, man?
Ryan, good to hear your voice, man.
That's weird, but I appreciate you coming on the show. How are you? You good?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Just trying to recover from last night's title game, and then the last 72 hours of my life have been spent monitoring Donovan McNabb ever since it happened Easter Sunday evening. That has sort of taken over my life, and so as I hit publish on another blog entry, I just sort of try to think, okay, what is the angle we haven't covered yet, and then I go from there. So today at least we had a news conference to give me a little something to work with.
All right. Well, I think I have an angle that I'll share with you at the very end of this. But I want to start with this. How much better are the Redskins now with McNabb as opposed to what they had prior to the transaction on Sunday?
They're better. Are they, you know, they were a 4-win team. To challenge for the division, you got to get 7 more wins. Is McNabb, is he good enough to get them 7 wins? I have a hard time believing that at this point. So I think they're certainly better, but you have to look at the talent that he's surrounded with. When Favre took over in Minnesota, he had, you know, arguably the best running back in the game that he had. You know, McNabb steps in, and you got Larry Johnson, Clinton Portis, Willie Parker. I mean, it's like the gang of 30-year-olds that were all their peak years were about 4 or 5 years ago. So it makes them better, but I don't, you know, everything I'm reading where people say, oh, they're automatically co-favorites to win the NFC East. I think that's a stretch at this point.
Matt Mosley of ESPN.com on the McNabb trade. Is it possible for a team to turn over an offensive line unit that in 1 year was one of the worst to turn it into something that's respectable? Can that just happen in one off season?
I think it's pretty difficult. I think you can get better. I don't think Artis Hicks makes you infinitely better. I question, you know, even if you take Russell Okung, the and everybody sort of thinks that maybe the direction they're going, the Oklahoma State left tackle. I mean, you know, sometimes it works. Jake Long comes into Miami, and it immediately works at left tackle. Jason Smith was taken by the Rams second overall last year. I don't think, I know he got hurt, but, I mean, he wasn't setting the world on fire there immediately. So I don't think, I think you can get better. And I think they have some pieces that you sort of plug in there and be okay. But I still think that's the biggest question mark. I mean, they've got some talent at wide receiver. They've got a couple of talented tight ends. But I don't think you can completely overhaul an offensive line in one off season. And so far, I haven't seen anything to believe that they're going to be able to accomplish that.
If Vic is not on the roster for Philadelphia, is this move made?
Oh yeah, I don't think Vic was. I don't think he's a huge part of this thing.
But why is he still there then? I've agreed with you every step of the way, though, saying I can't believe Vic is still on the roster.
Now they're going to pay him all this money. Don't you believe in this huge social experiment they're doing? You know, saving. I mean, that was Jeff Lurie's whole thing, and you know, hey, we're gonna be able to for dog lovers across the country in the Philadelphia area. This is gonna help. You know, they painted this thing as some sort of grand social experiment. And that they could help rehabilitate this guy's life. And I think to a certain extent, I mean, there was some sincerity there. But part of the reason you pay a guy $5 million, especially coming into this season, is to actually contribute on the field. And I haven't seen evidence. Last year, I didn't see any evidence in the Wildcat that was really going to happen. So, I do marvel at the fact that you would pay a backup quarterback $5 million, but at least at this point, that's who they're going to go with.
When we look at Philadelphia, a lot of people say, well, this is a rebuilding year now for them. But with that talent, is it really a rebuilding year?
Well, they don't see it that way. McNabb obviously said that today, which I'm sure they loved. But they see it as they've got a lot of young players who have already gotten some experience. You know, Macklin, Jackson, Selleck, all these guys. Is this team built more for 2011 or 2012? Probably so. But they have enough faith and confidence in Cobb to think of themselves as still a playoff team. Or, you know, I don't think anybody thinks that, oh, they've replaced McNabb with Kevin Cobb. They're going to be a ton better. I mean, I think in some ways in the immediate future they have to take a step back. But the thought is that Kevin Cobb, for down the road, you got to give him a chance to start working with these young guys, and that they'll be better off down the road. So they don't see it as rebuilding. I don't totally see it as rebuilding, but I do see it as this is a team that I think could have potentially win big in 2011 or 2012 more than I do in 2010.
Final thought here. Today at the press conference for McNabb, somebody asked him if he's thought about retiring, going into the Hall of Fame as a member of the Redskins and not the Eagles. One of the Philadelphia reporters, after the question was attempted to be answered, said, you thought we asked bad questions in front of everybody. So I want to ask you, Matt Mosley, as a veteran of the press conference, what's the worst question you've ever asked a coach or player?
Oh, that's a... It has to involve, and that was kind of a rough one today. I did hear that. And that's funny. I wonder who the Eagles reporter was that called him out. I'll have to dig into that. The worst, I mean, I think it probably, Ryan, would be one where I wasn't listening and focusing too much on my question. And I probably asked Parcells one time a question that had already been asked. And as you know, Parcells doesn't suffer fools, real easily. And it just a stare down. I mean, I've had a couple of questions that caused Parcells to turn it away from the mic, issue an expletive to me, and then come back to the mic. But off the top of my head, I can't remember what those questions were.
Probably something about a cover two or something like that. Something stupid.
Cover two questions. I still can't explain that.
Hey man, good stuff. We'll keep track of the latest McNabb news on your blog for the NFC East on ESPN.com. Thanks, Matt.
Baylor would have beaten Duke, by the way, last night. I'll see you later, Ryan.
Yeah, no, I appreciated you. I couldn't believe it took that long for you to say that.
This is The Herd. Here's Colin.
You know, I've never met Amani Toomer, a University of Michigan superstar. Went to the NFL, great career with the Giants. He's in studio. And I asked him during the break, Amani, where did you get that name? And you said...
Oh, my parents were actually hippies. I grew up in Berkeley, California.
Berserkly,
California, if you're familiar with that. And, you know, they went through the Swahili dictionary.
Yeah.
And they didn't get through the A's. And my name's Amani, and it means peace. It's the perfect hippie name.
So you go to the Big Ten, have a great career, go to the NFL. We were just talking Donovan McNabb, and I love you. It's great to get these, veteran, just retired NFL guys, because you have a great perspective now.
Yeah.
And I keep saying this, you're going to miss Donovan McNabb. Everybody thinks you can just, I'm a big McNabb guy. What do you make of what Philadelphia did?
I think they don't understand. They got so comfortable with McNabb, the way how good he was, that they didn't realize what they were before they had McNabb. Because before they had McNabb, they were a struggling team to make the playoffs year in, year out. They had a good defense, but they are missing that quarterback. And it's not easy to find those franchise quarterbacks. I mean, is Cobb going to be as good as even Brady Quinn? You don't know that. You know, I mean, so for them to think that Cobb is going to be the answer, it just blows my mind.
Yeah, and now, by the way, now they're interested in Vic, Tebow, and Kevin Cobb. Good luck with that. Go ask the Steelers after Bradshaw until Roethlisberger. It was like 40 guys.
Yeah.
And there were a lot more Bubby Bristers than Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Amani Toomer, who's not officially retired yet. Are you official? When are you going to announce it? Do you want to play? What's going to go on?
No, I don't want to play anymore. It's too much on the body. I'm enjoying being off. I actually had twins recently.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they're 3 months old, so I'm really happy about that. Amani Jr. and Jasmine. Well, hope they're listening well. They're 3 months. They're not listening much.
No, not, if they are, they're not comprehending much.
They're doing a lot of babbling and spitting up, but that's about it.
Now, what do you, when you look at, so somebody asked me about who did I like in the NFC East, and I went yesterday to a stat, Amani, which was interesting. Of the eight division winners last year, 7 of 8 had the best quarterback in the division. Of the bottom teams in every division, 6 of 8 had the worst quarterback. In a league where you can't touch the receivers or the quarterback, I argue the quarterback, here's what I argue. Wide receivers in the NFL today are running backs 15 years ago.
No question. I mean, they even brought in the spread offense in college is actually matriculating its way into the NFL with all these quick screens. Those are nothing but long handoffs.
Yes.
And the receivers are, you can have a receiver around for longer then you can have a running back. So if you want to invest in a good running back, you might just want to have, you know, put a little money in a receiver. You have to pay them less. There's more good ones, and they'll be just as effective throughout the game.
And the game is more violent. Running backs last 6 years max. A receiver can last 15 years. I mean, Andre Reed can play forever. I mean, how many years did you play in the NFL?
I played 13 years.
Yeah, you don't see running backs, and you were effective until the end.
Yes.
You don't see running backs playing. I mean, basically, LT went like 7 years, and then his numbers fell off a cliff.
Yeah, I mean, actually being there and seeing what the hits that running backs take, you realize why they can't play that long. I saw LT play, you bringing up LT, I saw him play against the Jets this last season. He just wasn't the same guy.
Not the same guy.
At all. I mean, he can't make that first guy miss. He can't break tackles like he used to. It's amazing how fast they go down. And you're right. I don't understand why you'd sit up and try and pay a running back so much money.
You know, it's interesting what's going on in New York with the crosstown Jets. Very good defensively. They've got a little bit of a rah-rah coach. He's the antithesis of Tom Coughlin. As a Giant, what do you make of the resurgence, the renaissance of the Jets?
Well, they got to do something, you know. I mean, they've always been the redheaded stepchild. No offense to redheads, but they've always been that way. And they have to find a way to kind of get out of the shadow of the Giants. They play in a stadium called Giant Stadium. And, you know, they need their own identity. Rex Ryan is like the perfect fit for them. They're brash now. They got an identity. You know, they got a young quarterback. They got a California. They're on their way. And I think the Giants are starting to realize that they could lose a lot of kind of cachet in New York City if they don't start acting fast, because they haven't done anything in the offseason.
Another NFL topic to throw out. You're a smart guy. It'll be interesting to hear your response. In the NFL, quarterback is like shortstop for the Yankees. It's the position. You are the face of the franchise. You can change the value of the franchise. I mean, Brett Favre has made the Vikings worth more, probably $50 million more. Here you have Ben Roethlisberger for the second time in a uncomfortable, bordering on illegal assault, sexual issue. What in God's name do you make of Roethlisberger in this situation, which is, you know, they are saying now it's much more serious than the situation a year ago. Former player looking in. What do you make of it? What do you do if you coach or run the Steelers?
You got to start thinking about going in a different direction. Not because the guy, there's a lot of guys that play in the league that are good enough to play for a long time.
Yes.
But there's not a lot of guys good enough to be to stay off the field, to stay out of trouble long enough for your organization to really build around. This guy is a guy they've built around. I'm interested to see, this is my question to you. I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Roger Goodell, because there's precedence in this situation with Pac-Man Jones. He never got convicted of anything.
Right.
But he got arrested a lot of times. What is he going to do? Because this is the exact same situation, but Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, these are sexual assaults. These are big time things that the NFL does not want to be have any part of.
I believe, Imani, he needs to be suspended. Whether he's... Well,
no question.
In my opinion, he has to be suspended, and I don't care what the legality of it is. If you take both of them into consideration, what's a reasonable, a month?
This is a sexual assault. The NFL is running away from this like the plague. They do not want any of their players connected with any kind of sexual assault. I would say he should be suspended for at least 8 games.
Wow, half the season.
At least 8 games.
Now, when you were with the Giants, did the league come down? And obviously the league, you were a veteran player by the end, so you're not going through the rookie symposium, how to speak to the media. Obviously you're a bright guy, you've been around forever. But the big picture, did the league come down annually and warn you about things?
Every year. Actually, I'm dating myself a little bit, but I was in the league before the rookie symposium even came out. But it's a good thing they do. I think the NFL tries everything they can do to try and make sure that their players are on the straight and narrow. But the reality of the situation is you have players that have lived 20 to 22 years before they've got into the league.
That's right.
They have experiences already with life.
Or habits. Or bad habits.
Exactly. And so they need to try and find a way to... I mean, I don't know what they can do. I mean, they do the best they can. I really think they do the best they can.
Imani Toomer, 8 games for Big Ben is what he suggested. He comes from hippies. Now, did you ever, you should be lenient. Hippies are lenient. Did you, like, sleep in a tent? What do you mean, hippies? What does that mean?
Well, you know, they moved from Ohio out to California.
Yeah.
They're around in that area, the 70s, late, early 70s. You know, that whole Bay Area kind of
Kumbaya,
Haight-Ashbury kind of area.
That was your parents?
I mean, they had to be. They moved out from
Ohio.
Ohio.
Do you remember as a kid hippie-esque things?
Oh, yeah. My school, the school that I went to, we'd go every Friday, we'd go protesting at the University of California. It was the funniest thing.
Your high school?
No, my elementary school. It was
you
called,
were brushing it in elementary school?
Yeah, it was called Montessori Family Center in Berkeley, California. We'd go there and we'd go protest. I mean, we were protesting apartheid before it even got popular.
That is awesome. Yeah. Imani, an absolute pleasure to meet you.
Thanks.